listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, friends. Hello, Steve. Welcome back, everyone, to the Tennis.com podcast. This is Ed McGrogan, a longer hiatus than our typical hiatuses here with the Ed and Steve show. But we did improve some equipment on my end, so I apologize for some of the earlier gaffes in the production. Hopefully that alleviates itself, and hopefully we can satisfy your cravings for some more tennis talk here as we enter the fall. I don't know if it's apropos or not, Steve, that after a horrific kind of sports day over the weekend and a pretty, however you want to put it, interesting, pivotal, at least must-watch day in the political landscape in the U.S., we sort of shift gears and talk about the fall season of tennis. I don't know what that really means, but we're here to discuss it for whatever it is worth. I think that's up for debate as well. What is this season truly worth? The calendar is always really revolved around the slams, but there's quite a bit of tennis and certainly a lot of money on the line after the U.S. Open, and that's what we're here to talk about today.
Yeah, there's a lot of tennis. It seems like it fades away from the headlines, but it's almost like there's more happening now, sort of a race to the finish. I think it is interesting on the men's side this year with Novak Djokovic. He comes in a little shakier than he has in past years, and to me that makes this fall a little more interesting where he's concerned. Where does he go from here? Does he immediately bounce back? He's had a couple. It's the first time in a few years he didn't win either Wimbledon or the U.S. Open. Traditionally, he sweeps through the fall. This is almost his best part of the year. He just kind of seems to relax, play on hard courts, play on his favorite surface. He won four tournaments last year, but now it starts to feel like it's a lot to defend. Is he going to be able to keep doing that?
Yeah, and Djokovic was one of the main reasons I'm sort of unsure a little bit on my own side of where I kind of assess and value this particular season, because recently we've seen reports, even a video of Djokovic saying that he really, since the French Open, since finally getting that monkey off his back, hasn't been able to summon that proper level of motivation and really just desire to win at all costs. And I think it should say something that in spite of all that, he ends up making the U.S. final, open or final, regardless, winning a Masters event in the summer. Clearly that's how good Novak Djokovic is and has been for a long time. But you make a good point about this is typically a time for him to feast on the end of the season. And you do wonder if perhaps we've, subconsciously or not, kind of entered another phase of really his career arc. And maybe this fall, if for nothing else, can kind of tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think that's a natural thing to happen after he won the French. He won four straight slams. It had taken him 11 tries to win the French, and he finally did it. And I think there was a lot in that, and a lot, it would be natural for him to have a letdown, but and he's also had a couple, some physical problems, but he's also 29, which makes it more interesting. He's not like he's 25 and this is just a little glitch. This is right at the point where Federer stopped being as dominant as he was. Nadal stopped being dominant maybe even a year earlier. Not many guys continue that kind of dominance into 30. We've seen that people play better when they're older these days, but we'll see, will we see Djokovic be as dominant as he was, or is it going to be, will it just be a little bit of a, a little bit of an opening for other people in general going forward? And I think we'll start to, maybe you start to see that this fall, how motivated he is to win all of these tournaments. He's always, he's never had a problem with that in the past, and maybe he won't this time, but at least there's some question about it.
If not Djokovic, then where do you go from, where do you look for someone on the men's side, some players that could perhaps pick up a little of the slack here in terms of really kind of making this season one that can catapult them perhaps to bigger things next year, if and to say nothing of what they can accomplish this year.
I mean, I think Stan Wawrinka is an interesting case right now. What is he? What's going to happen with him? Will he just continue sort of the way he's been in the past couple of years, winning a big one but not winning a lot of the smaller ones? I would feel like after his win at the U.S. Open, that almost felt like something that would move him to another level, that would make him a constantly competitor for slam titles, and somebody who might even think he could become number one. I mean, he just showed that he can beat Djokovic in big matches twice. Like, why wouldn't that give him another level of confidence? And he made the final this week in St. Petersburg, but then he lost to Zverev, and he sort of showed his inconsistency again at the end of that match. He was ahead, and then he lost, and I felt like maybe that's the way Stan's just going to continue. But he, at least you feel like he should feel like he can win anything at this point.
Yeah, you don't even necessarily think about the number one possibility until you mention it right there. You know, it's always been, you know, Murray is kind of the real challenger to Djokovic at the top there, but you're right to mention Wawrinka in that if he would develop that week to week consistency, it's not off the table to suggest that maybe as I just said about Djokovic, it's kind of a somehow at 30, another phase of his career too. So. And you mentioned Zverev, who defeated Wawrinka in St. Petersburg for his first tour title. It was actually the first first teenager to win on the ATP, incredibly, since 2008. Marin Cilic won back then. You know, it's shocking. It's not shocking in that that's really the year that I think the big four sort of began to coalesce a bit more when you factor in Murray and even Djokovic winning Australia back then. But it's shocking that, and it's a sign of really the graceful aging of the men's tour of tennis in general, really, that it took that long for this kind of a breakthrough. But we have been looking for that from Zverev and from other young players recently. But you know, for those who didn't see that Wawrinka Zverev final, and you mentioned Wawrinka went ahead at the end, but it was a very strong three-set win by the young German. How did that transpire? And you know, really, what did you take away in terms of in terms of Zverev in particular?
I feel like Zverev, he had lost a couple finals this year. I sort of felt like he's spent this year. This has been a really good year for him, not just success-wise, but also just as far as learning, as far as winning some and then losing some and then learning from those losses. You know, he lost that tough match to Nadal at Indian Wells where he had a match point, and then he lost two finals. And since then, when he had a chance to beat Federer, he beat Federer. And now when he had a chance to win this final, which it wouldn't have been any shame to lose to Wawrinka after being down 3-love in the third. He didn't lose it. I think he felt like, you know, he'd learned enough from the other two, and this was his chance to win. I felt like he was confident at the end, and he didn't even need to play spectacular tennis. He just played his game, played a solid game, more consistent than Wawrinka. And there were some points where you would have thought Zverev would have cracked a little. You know, he was expecting it, and I think Stan might have been expecting it, but he didn't. He hit the right shot. He, you know, came up with the shot of almost what a veteran, what somebody who knows how to win a tournament would hit. So I thought it was impressive. The guy is definitely for real. We've heard a lot of talk about him as a future number one. It's definitely a possibility. He's got the shot that all of the top players have, the forehand that he can hit for winners and that he can hit consistently. You know, that's the common denominator among the best guys, the guys who do become number one, and he has that.
Yes, and he has the untouchable stuff of great height as well, and everything that comes with that too.
The only thing I would say is the last winner was Cilic. You know, I don't know if Zverev wants to be the next Marin Cilic. Doesn't necessarily mean where he's going to be the next Federer. You know, Cilic has turned out to be a very good player, but it's not like he's dominated the tour. So, you know, you still don't know about these things. But Zverev has done, you know, he's had probably the best possible year he could have had.
And I think it's not, you know, as I was mentioning about where we could see some of the younger players sort of make their mark on this fall. And a guy who has done that even before the fall at the U.S. Open was Luca Puy, who defeated Nadal at the Open. But he's already followed that up with a nice run here in the fall. And as we were talking about earlier, sort of has barged his way into you know, that the good sort of crop of really rising prospects on the tour. You know, for those who watched tennis very closely, Puy was certainly a known name, but I think given what we've seen lately, we may have to we should be taking him a lot more seriously as a player who might be a lot more than a random upset at a major tournament.
Yeah, I think it was interesting to me that he beat Puy for his first tournament when he beat Dominic Thiem, and Thiem has obviously had the best year of all the young guys. He's in the top 10. He's won 4 tournaments, but you know, there's also this feeling the team plays too much tennis and he can't seem to stop it. You know, he just played this tournament in Europe and now he's straight off to a tournament in China, even after he admitted at the U.S. Open that he's been playing too much. And it almost seemed like the first half of the year belonged to him, and Puy has kind of come along, had a good Wimbledon, had a huge win, obviously, over Nadal in one of the matches of the year at the Open, and now he gets this win. And it's almost like he's, you know, he's up to number 16, which is much higher than I thought he was. So he's sort of the guy who's come along in the second half of the year and put his name in there. His game, I almost feel like it's more of a solid game going forward even than Thiem's because of his two-handed backhand. Thiem's one-handed backhand is tremendous, but it's always something of a liability in, you know, there's in the game today. And Puy just has a very a game that's really built for tennis now, and he seems to really be coming into it. He moves really well and attacks really well.
I also really like Puy's temperament as well. I think that's been, when we talk about young players, and from what I saw, not only against Nadal, but, you know, in other matches he played, I think that is one of, you know, going beyond strokes to see what kind of makeup you have in really some pretty pressure-filled situations. I didn't get the sense that anything was too big for him, given what was in front of him, too.
Yeah, he seems pretty level. You know, he almost doesn't have much of a personality that you can describe, or he has much less personality than, you know, outgoing on-court personality than
other French guys, too, quite honestly.
Obviously, all the other French guys. But maybe that's good. You know, maybe that's good for his game and in the long term.
Yeah. It's and we'll get to Davis Cup. I want to close on that with the men's side after, because we didn't really get a chance to hit upon that. But I want to move over to the WTA side as well. And, you know, we're already in the midst of a run of very lucrative and strong WTA tournaments. You just had Tokyo, the Pan Pacific Open, where Wozniacki beats Radwanska for the title. And the strong fields and the good purses continue right through from Wuhan to Beijing. Today in Wuhan, this is being recorded on Tuesday, so this will age incredibly quickly. But Angelique Kerber first matches world number one. She gets by Mladenovic in 3 sets. It's a major quality field in a 56 player tournament, I believe. Sole exception being Serena Williams, who pulls out of Wuhan and next week's event in Beijing with injury, planning on playing Singapore. Where should we start with the women's side? I mean, I think it's probably fair at this point to start at the top, because I think what Angelique Kerber does as clearly the player of the year, the new number one, 2-time major champion, you know, where she kind of goes next, being that you can't really go any further up, but just how she builds upon that is very interesting to me.
I guess the question now, you know, when she wins the big ones, but can she win the, you know, can she win the little ones? Can she win the smaller tournaments? She won two Grand Slams this year, and she won only one other tournament in Stuttgart, one of her home tournaments that she was a defending champion at. You know, she's had other good results, Wimbledon final, silver medal at the Olympics, but does she become, you know, does she become a number one who
is the prohibitive favorite every single time?
Yeah, is somebody sort of favored every week? And I guess it's the same question as we asked with Wawrinka. Does she become someone who, who, you know, the other players fear more, or is she, you know, is she expected to win every week? Does she, you know, she's never going to dominate in the way Serena does, but does she become a number one in that sense? So that's the next question for her, and these two tournaments will say something along those lines. So far, she hasn't been that person. She's lost some big matches in finals, and she doesn't really have the game. You know, maybe she can develop that game. She doesn't really have the game to dominate like that. She relies on other people missing at a certain point. She's obviously made herself better and more aggressive, but her basic game is consistency. And so, you know, that's not. I don't know if that leads to the type of player we're talking about here. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before, Serena's, you know, punting on these two tournaments for injury, it's very hard to envision that she recaptures the number one ranking by the end of this year, even perhaps given her a winning result in Singapore. So there's, you know, there's that to consider. It's really, it will probably open up 2017. You know, you just kind of think back to where... You think back to where we were a year ago at this time with Serena coming off of another semifinal loss at the Open. You know, so really we're in the same situation, but obviously feels a lot differently given how the rest of the year transpired for her. And of course, you know, with another year, you know, on the mileage list, you know, you always have to consider that when really thinking of the immediate future of Serena. So it's even though Serena will not be playing for the majority of this fall season, I think she still factors her way into the discussion as to her really what's next for her and kind of ultimately her place in the game right now.
Yeah, she only played eight tournaments this year. Is that the way she's going to go? I mean, she had a strong results at almost all of them, except I guess the Olympics. But and she's going to probably play the ninth in Singapore. It's amazing. She's still, you know, number two in the world. I think it right now, I sort of get the feeling the one thing she wants to do and care about is getting that 23rd slam. I think she wants to pass Steffi. She wanted to pass Steffi at number one for consecutive weeks at number one. She ended up tying her. I think that was something important to her. I don't know if getting back to number one now after that's over is as important. I think getting that slam, that 23rd slam, is probably the one thing she has on her mind right now. So, you know, even going into next year, that'll be the goal. And other than that, I'm not sure. I think everything probably revolves around that. That's the feeling I get with her right now. She had kind of a tough ending of the season, some shoulder problems and a couple losses, very unexpected losses to Svitolina and Pliskova. That doesn't lend itself to a feeling like she's the dominant player she has been.
Right. And I guess it's probably worth touching on really Pliskova as well. I think coming out of the Open, we certainly could – you know, coming into the Open, we certainly entertained the possibility of, okay, maybe given what Angelique Kerber has done throughout the year, it's not out of the realm of possibility to see her taking this, even beating Serena Williams along the way. It didn't come to pass, but that's what we got at the end. But I don't think anyone, perhaps even on the men's side and women's side, came out of this tournament looking and being received so favorably as Pliskova. I felt like it was just gushing praise for really what she is capable of and may do, you know, given what a very a great performance from start to finish, a very compelling women's final. And, you know, I think that you know, we may see her in Singapore. And I think that might be one of, you know, the year-end championships. To me, I've never been in love with them for a few reasons. I think that the round-robin stage is, you know, no matter how it's a very convenient schedule, but you're always going to get some kind of wonky results because of the tiebreakers and stuff. You get players kind of at the end of the year really kind of running on fumes. But I often think that players who make it to these events and really are put in this best-on-best for really the first time, it does reveal a lot about them. And if Pliskova happens to make it to there, she's in the top eight now. I would like to see her kind of against this gauntlet and maybe, you know, get a sense of her standing as well amongst this crew.
Yeah. Pliskova is somebody, you know, I was thinking last year we saw Muguruza really make a rise in the fall and thinking who could do that this time. Pliskova is obviously a player you look at first after her U.S. Open showed what she could do there, showed sort of how much more belief she ended that tournament with than she had before it, I think. We'll see. You know, she's always has always been inconsistent. That's not going to change, I don't think. But her game is one I think people like to watch because she hits winners. She's very smooth, very calm, it seems. Great serve. You know, I think she's won her first match in Wuhan. We'll see how that goes. But, I think if there's one player that people would like to see, you know, move up and be there again, it's her. I think Simona Halep has a chance to have a good fall. She had a really good summer overall. It ended with a good match against Serena, but she seems like she could be primed to do something this fall and move up further. I don't know if anybody's going to do what Muguruza did last year, but there's certainly an opening there for that with Serena out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly the way to put it. It's kind of a, a wait-and-see approach to a degree. Like I said, I wanted to end, actually, on Davis Cup. It's the, a fall preview would not be complete without a tournament that practically goes into the winter in the tennis calendar. It's Thanksgiving weekend. It's a ways away, but it is the capstone of the season, and I know you previewed the semis, but haven't really touched base on the outcome of that since then. The result is Argentina will travel to Croatia for the final. Argentina defeating Britain in a very compelling five-set tie for a variety of reasons, not just what will happen on the court, but from what Argentina, how they played their hand, you know, with Del Potro playing singles and doubles, really because he did not feel he would be able to do another five set singles on his own, even despite his win over Murray in the first day and how much of a favorite ostensibly he would be. Regardless, and you get Croatia again handing France yet another semifinal defeat. Excuse me. So I look at this final as really one of the most important events of Juan Martín Del Potro's career, not just because of this hex that he can finally end for Argentina. If you look at how far they progressed over the past 15 years or so, it is stunning that they have not won a title. They have put themselves in position so many times, but really for Del Potro in general, and with this year and the comeback that, you know, we've heard Del Potro's comebacks kind of time and time again, but this one this summer has been something different. It's you can feel that is really a relief for everybody, I think, that this guy who jumped on the scene in 2008 and 2009, at the time, sort of heralding perhaps a new one of the greats in the game, and it just hasn't. It's been that flickering for many times. We've often seen Del Potro at his best, but hardly for long stretches. I think for all those reasons and more, you know, this could really be one of, I think, the guy's career defining moments, and I think it puts a lot more emphasis on an event that's really gotten through, it's gone through some tough times in the media, from the players. But I think this one has the potential to deliver on a number of fronts.
Yeah, I think it will be a, you know, pretty much the perfect end to the season for, you know, if Del Potro won this, helped Argentina win in a way, you know, his comeback, and then Argentina finally getting Davis Cup. The thing about them is their sports fans there really want it. You know, it's not like the U.S. in the U.S. Where it's kind of under the whole thing is under the radar. That it's a big deal there. Some, you know, somebody like Maradona goes to the away ties, but which would seems amazing to me. And they'll be there in Croatia. They travel. But I think, for this past weekend, you know, all the experts, you know, everyone who was watching was just pretty much dumbfounded that Delpo would play doubles after winning a really great match, another one of the best matches of the year, against Murray on the opening day, that he would play doubles the next day. And then they would put in Leonardo Mayer in the fifth rubber. But they, you know, they sort of knew what they were doing all along, because Mayer is not a famous or top 20 player, but he's a very good Davis Cup player. He was 10-3 in Davis Cup singles coming into it, and he showed it. He was too good for Dan Evans. You know, it seems like Argentina knew they had him kind of in their back pocket, and it worked for them. So that's something that Argentina has. You know, in the past they've tended to lose these ties that you thought they were going to win. Here's one that they were smart and you know, well, a step ahead of everyone else, and they won a tie that I think most people thought they would lose. So we'll see about Croatia. I would say also I would feel, it would be great for Delpo to win, but I also feel it would be nice for somebody like Cilic to win Davis Cup. I just think back to that loss he had to Federer at Wimbledon. It was just another one of the best matches, devastating loss, mm-hmm. had to be the most devastating loss of anyone had this year. For him to be able to come back and finish the year with the Davis Cup win, that would also be, that would be great to see. And, you know, these two guys, they've sort of grew up together. They've each won one Grand Slam, but have never been dominant. Here's a chance for them to get another big win.
Yes, redemption is afoot, for sure. It'll be interesting to see if, if Del Potro's ranking will put him as the top-ranked Argentinian, which means that the fourth rubber would be Cilic, Del Potro. Not sure where the rankings have shaken out at the moment, but that's you know, that's why you got that Del Potro Murray day one match, because of you know, sort of the real rankings, but not truly accurate of the quality that he's hitting with at the moment. So it's a lot going on in that final, as you say. So let's put a cap on this as well, and we'll reconvene next week after Wuhan and just before Beijing going. I think we'll have a lot more to say and to really to know on the WTA side. We'll go heavy on the women for that reason. Men really do take their time to get going in the fall. Women's season ends quite a bit earlier, and with that, you get some really strong fields right away. So thank you for listening. For Steve Tigner, this is Ed McGrogan at the Tennis.com Podcast.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com Podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.